I get it. I'm just an insufferable homer. I know.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
It's true. It's true. That's why Dibley started grunting earlier.
Yeah, you just can't help it.
He couldn't take it anymore. you won't hear any Homer 49er takes from me if Trent Williams doesn't play in this game. But, there's a big but here.
That's right.
In this final hour of 95.7 The Game, Monday through Friday, three-show content. I know Grandy's coming up at 6, too, but in this last hour on our show, I don't know if I want to promise or vow. No Ayuk, no Trent. No Ayuk, no Trent. In fact, wanted to go through what we think are some of the top non-hold-in, hold-out contractual stories that are facing the 49ers as they get ready to start this season. And there are a number that actually very, very much pique my interest. I don't know how you feel about all these, but 888-957-9570. You're welcome to share some of yours or react to some of the ones we've got out. Let me throw one out. You had a little list. I've got a little list. Here's one that I know is big to both of us. And that is that right now, as we sit here today, without fully knowing all the answers, the draft looks like it might have been really good. I can just genuinely tell you, I am very, very excited to see how some of these rookies contribute. And let me add this on as well. Of all the rookies that we talk about and we're looking forward to, because of the way football fandom works, and we get into the skill positions more than the other positions usually. Right now, one of the names I'm really, really looking at is Jacob Cowing. I think he's going to be a player that we talk about by the time it gets to week 10, 11, 12. That's going to be a dude. That especially when you add in the disruption that's currently going on with the starting group at that position.
Yeah, it could be exciting. And he's a player who, you know, he's still a little behind, but can he catch up over the course of a couple of weeks? And how much does the Brandon Ayuk hold in affect his ability to step up and play? If Ayuk doesn't ever make it in, or if he makes it in late, yeah, you might need Cowing ahead of Pearsall early on. And you look at the depth chart of the wide receiver room, and a lot of guys didn't quite make the cut today. Ronnie Bell did, Chris Conley did, but Cowing's a guy who's looked good enough and made some plays in that last preseason game that have you excited. For me, it's Malik Mustafa, and he's been the one early on. I think he made the earliest splash in camp, and a couple times I've been out there in camp, you see the way he's just built. He's an absolute fire hydrant, and he's out there looking for content, lighting people up, and he's been somebody who, just watching him with the eye test, he looks like somebody who thinks he's a 5 or 6 year vet. Little bit of the Poughkeepsie kid, Brad Podziemski, you know, where
yeah.
Mustafa out there acting like he's somebody who not only belongs, but somebody who fits in and feels like he's been a part of the fabric for a long time. So I look forward to seeing what he can do at safety, especially while Hufanga tries to work his way back from injury.
Well, and let me add this, because there's been a lot of positive sort of, you know, media with regard to Mustafa. Recently with Jacob Cowing, who I just mentioned, the late picks, Jarrett Kingston didn't make the team. You know, Tatum Bethune was a seventh-round pick. But if you look at the rest of the guys, obviously the one who's gotten the most positive press so far is Dominic Pooney. Okay, he comes out of the third round, and Brian Baldinger, I think, wants to move in with him. He's talked to him, talked about him so much, and he's putting video content out about a right guard. So there's a lot of positivity there. Renardo Green, same thing. Let me add this. Don't give up on Ricky Pearsall yet. Don't do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to.
I know you're not, but like, I mean, literally, we had a texter earlier today listing off first round misses by the Niners, and you put Ricky Pearsall in there. You're gonna leave Ricky Pearsall before the season even started?
That's crazy.
I still think Ricky Pearsall could end up being fantastic. Now, the other thing, though, and maybe this is to swing it the other direction, even the guys you've decided in the preseason and in camp are fantastic, they might stink. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with people who actually played the game, and they're like, dude, there are players that when the lights come on, their lights go off. Absolute practice studs. And then the games start, and the speed goes up, and the intensity goes up, and the attention goes up, and they just don't have it anymore. So I'm sold on no one, but excited about many of them.
Right. Yeah, I think excited by the three we named, the four we named most particularly, and Ricky Pearsall is the one, the first-round pick, who you've got the highest hopes for, but with the shoulder and him also being a little bit behind, you know, his impact might be second half of the year, and it might not be until next year. We don't know. Dominic Pooney has the best chance in week one to make an impact. It looks like he's going to be starting at right guard.
Yep.
And so of all the rookies, he might be the only one who truly starts. And I know formation and, you know, Hutch made that point about, you know, Cowing might actually be in the starting lineup if you go to a three wide receiver set right away. So technically he would be a starter, but you look at Pooney and you think, yeah, you're going to be our right guard and we're expecting you to be there for all 17.
By the way, I also want to add real quick with me mentioning Bethune in the seventh round, he did make the team. Kingston's the only draft pick who did not make the team with this initial roster. Yeah, Grandy,
that's exactly what I was going to say.
Oh,
seventh
God,
round
dude,
pick
sorry.
This year, Tatum Bethune. But he made it essentially over last year's seventh round pick, Jalen Graham, who did not make the team. That was kind of a surprise. I mean, a seventh round pick this year makes it over a seventh round pick last year who has a whole year's worth of experience.
Right. I mean, like at a minimum, while I don't want to put a green check next to any pick until we see actual NFL games, that's got to say something that almost the entire draft made the team. That's got to be something, right? Now, your early picks automatically are going to make the team. But, like, your late picks kind of made it, too. You know, Cowing, now, you didn't have any fifth rounders. Your sixth rounder got cut. But your seventh rounder made it. And your fourth rounders all made it. And they made it at premium positions where you had to let go of some pretty experienced people to keep you on the team. Eli Mitchell, season-ending IR, keeping Garendo. You know, Jacob Cowing out of the fourth round. Like, they're going to get rid of an experienced person like Robbie Chosen. They're going to get rid of a homegrown player like Danny Gray. And you're on the team. And by the way, there was never even any question about that. So, I don't know. That says something about the draft.
Now, I think it says something about last year's draft because
totally fair.
Jalen Graham, and I'm just looking at the numbers, last year he played 58 total plays all on special teams. He did not play even a single snap on defense, and Danny Gray's not listed in any snap counts. I don't think that Danny Gray played at all last year, so it's maybe more of a reflection of previous drafts. Yeah, this draft seems to be better. You've got guys who you took and you were excited to keep them over previous years, like Cameron Latu, another guy who, you know, was unable to get on the field. He was drafted last year and he was cut today as well. So, yeah, this year's draft, it looks like you have better players, but compared to the last couple of drafts that were bad.
Well, last year, okay, hold on. Can you do that yet?
Well, you can look at a player that you drafted in the third round and he never played for you and you cut him.
Yes.
That is a bad pick.
All right, let me go through the picks last year. Okay. Round three, Jair Brown.
Yeah, it's a good pick.
Okay.
It's a good pick.
Round three, Jake Moody.
Yeah, it's a good pick. No, I like Jake Moody.
Okay.
He's got a big leg and last year he was, you know, a little bit up and down, but he, I think, is trending toward being a good kicker.
You can
debate the merits of using a third-round pick on a kicker if you want, but they like the player, and they've kept the player.
Okay. Round three, Cameron Latu.
That's a miss.
That's a miss.
Yeah.
All right. Next. Round five, Daryl Luter Jr.
Yeah, he looks to be a guy that you're
on the team,
and you're already thinking about maybe giving him a second contract. He might be somebody who survives if you can't afford to pay D'Amador Lenore and Mooney Ward. He might be the guy, the heir apparent. So, yeah, that's a good pick.
Round five, Robert Beal Jr. on the team.
Okay.
I know a lot of people don't know who that is. He's on the team. He made the roster today.
Yep. Played 79 total snaps last year, 39 on D, 40 in special teams. The jury's still out.
Round six, D Winters on the team and has generated some buzz.
Yep. Good special teamer last year. He played more than half of the special team snaps, so the jury's still out.
Round seven, Braden Willis.
Okay.
Cut today.
Yep.
And round seven, Ronnie Bell on the team.
For now. On the team-ish.
Right. But like,
maybe. Would you think he'll be in uniform on Monday in 13 days?
Probably not, but we're talking about
a seventh
rounder.
Right, but you can't champion Brock Purdy and then dismiss Ronnie Bell.
Well, no.
They're seventh round picks.
Well, no.
Picks.
No, I don't agree with that statement. You can champion Brock Purdy, but still have the same expectation level for seventh round picks, which is not much. Like, I'm not expecting you to go get starters in the seventh round on an annual basis just because of Brock Purdy. Like, yeah, you threw a Hail Mary and you caught it. Great. But I'm not going to now on the annual be like, dude, you better crush it with your round seven picks.
No, but at the same time, if, you know, you can't look at first round picks that you traded away and those turn out to be misses because you never got to use a player, and that's when you traded up to get Trey Lance. Those picks that you never got to make, those are misses. And first round misses are bigger and more important than seventh round misses.
Of course.
I guess, as we're going through this, I think that as you go further down the draft, if you hit on a Brock Purdy in the seventh, well, that's awesome. And if you miss on a Ronnie Bell, that's less than tragic because it's a seventh round pick.
Yeah, I guess I just don't call it a miss. He was picked in the seventh round and made the team now 2 years in a row. So I'm not asking for you to be a star. One other pick in that seventh round was the linebacker Jalen Graham out of Purdue, not on the team. But when I look at that, like, is there any star that came out of there? You wouldn't use that word yet, but you got a bunch of roster spots and potentially a couple starters.
Yeah, Jair
Brown is a starter. And I mean, I guess Jake Moody is a quote-unquote starter.
Sure.
Winters could graduate to that here very, very soon. There is some excitement about Luter going forward. And then there's a couple other roster spots in Beal and Bell. So I'm not here to be like amazing draft, but can you pass it off as bad draft already?
Not a good draft. I mean, you didn't have a first or second round pick, and you didn't have a first round pick because you traded it away.
Because of Trey Lance.
So that goes down as a big miss. And your first pick was in the third round, and yeah, Jair Brown is a guy who stepped in and he played pretty well for you down the stretch.
I mean, if
he starts again this year and plays the full year, then that's a hit in the third round.
I would argue that the draft from the year before is more a negative draft, and we're a year further away, which means we've got more answers. Obviously, everything gets overwhelmed by the fact that you found a starting quarterback. And if you told every NFL team going into a draft, you're going to blow every pick, but you're going to find a franchise QB, every GM would be like, done.
Yeah, but in terms of the draft, like, of those guys in 22, how many are still on the team outside of Brock Purdy?
Burford.
Right, he's a backup.
Womack.
Okay.
Zakel. And then Kalia Davis went on
IR.
But IR designated a return.
Yes. Zakel is a guy who might still be victimized as the roster gets shuffled. And Womack's been okay. He's a backup. So if it wasn't for the Hail Mary pick of Brock Purdy, that draft would be a disaster.
I agree. That's a bad draft. Drake Jackson, Ty Davis Price, Danny Gray, and then, you know, whatever, when you get well over 200 picks.
Womack got waived today, by the way.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, so Womack's not on the team.
Okay, Womack's not on the team anymore.
Burford cost you the Super Bowl. So there's that.
That's a tough label, bro. I get where you're coming from, but that's a wow.
I mean,
John Feliciano apparently agrees with you, but still,
yeah,
that's a hell of a label.
If he goes right instead of left,
then what?
Touchdown 49ers.
But the game's not over.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like,
that was definitely a drive-by. That was a rat-a-tat-tat.
That's a big label.
That was mean spirited.
You cost us the Super Bowl.
I mean, he is a backup, so.
Yeah. I mean, he did. He went the wrong way.
But that draft, and you
not
can't
a great
say
draft.
Outside of Brock Purdy, because that's going to go down as one of the greatest picks maybe in NFL history.
I could look at that and go, actually, it's a great draft solely because of the 262nd pick, Brock Purdy.
Yep.
Great draft. Amazing draft.
This is where you get the homer label affixed.
Hold on.
Great pick. Bad draft.
Ask any general manager. I actually don't know the answer, but wouldn't you be curious to know? Going into any single draft, and obviously these are teams who don't have a franchise QB. If I told you, going into this draft, you are going to whiff on every pick, but you're going to find your franchise QB, would the GM say yes or no?
Depends.
Does it?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, depends on what the rest of your roster looks like. Because there are teams that have franchise quarterbacks, and
they're not very good. Okay.
Those teams are okay.
Give me who?
Well, the Giants, they paid their guy like he's the franchise guy.
But he's not, and we all know that.
Well, they paid him like he was.
Right, and then literally...
They drafted him,
right,
and then he was pretty good, and then they paid him.
He was okay.
I mean, he was good enough to make $40 million a year.
In their minds, I mean,
right.
Again, I'll refer you to the Belichick comment. It was like, look, don't come to me with comps from teams who do stupid things. I can't control that the Browns want to give Deshaun Watson $235 guaranteed million dollars.
Franchise quarterback.
I can't control that the Giants thought Daniel Jones was worth $40 million a year.
Arizona Cardinals used the first overall pick on Kyler Murray, franchise quarterback.
Jury's still mildly out.
Yeah, I think the jury's ready to return its verdict.
I'm with you. But, like, I threw this out the other night to Ephraim. Remember what I told you we were doing our question deal? My question, my NFC West question was, is Kyler Murray good? And he just started laughing. How would you answer that?
No. Like, good, he's fine.
You're sure?
But, yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, he's very athletic.
Yeah.
He runs around and makes plays, but if you're asking for your quarterback to guide an offense and guide a team and win games and be a guy in January you can rely on, no. He's a turnover machine, and there's a lot of things that he doesn't do well.
He's been a crappy leader, is what I think is actually his
and
biggest problem.
And I don't think that he can win from the pocket. He's too small, and he doesn't have the downfield vision to hit the back foot and know where he's going to go.
Like, I think I'm with you, but I do leave open for some room there still, because last year he was still a player coming off of a torn ACL who relies on his legs. He still does do some dynamic things on the field. I think you could look at his skill position players and take shots at that through the last, frankly, through his whole career.
Yep.
You know, there are still people out there, the Steelers being one of them, who think that Justin Fields was a product of having nobody good around him. And if I were Justin, how ticked would you be that you're like, you got the first pick in the draft, you drafted Caleb Williams, and oh, by the way, while you did that, you brought in Keenan Allen, you drafted Roma Dunze, you put DeAndre Swift in the backfield, DJ Moore became an absolute stud, and now you're going to do that. Where the hell was that when I was your first-round quarterback?
Yeah, it's too bad. You hate to see it.
So this year, Kyler Murray's got Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yep.
He's got Trey McBride now, bubbling star at the tight end position.
Yeah.
It could look different.
It could, but it won't. I mean, Arizona probably 6-11, 7-10.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, like it's not, they're in a very difficult division. I do think
assuming that he survives the year, because the way he plays is, I think, conducive to injury.
See, I think he protects himself pretty well. He runs a lot, but he protects. I don't see him take a lot of hits. You know what I mean? Like, I hear that Washington is working real hard right now with Jaden Daniels on this. Like, dude, you gotta
get down.
You gotta go out of bounds, man. Yeah. Those extra 2 yards, that's a no
from us. Well,
you
saw it with Richardson last year. I mean, he got the memo too late.
Way too late.
He was getting tattooed.
Yeah.
Like, every play.
Week 2, people are like, this dude's good, but he's going to be gone
he's
by week 6.
He's not going to survive,
And then he was gone by week 6. He's gone. Yeah. So, I get it. But, yeah, like, I'm outside of Brock Purdy, I'm more down on the 2022 draft than the 2023 draft.
Yeah.
And this one feels pretty pretty fun.
And my point was simply that this one feels better early because of the lack of real depth from the previous two drafts. And, you know, you just ran through it and you found about, you know, six rostered players and maybe two starters, three if you count the quarterback, and you do count the quarterback, and that's great. But the last two drafts, 22 and 23, were not full of hits. But if you come out this year with Garendo, who's exciting, Cowing and Pearsall, who look promising, Dominic Pooney, and Renardo Green, who I think is going to be
a good depth
piece in the secondary. If you have five guys in this draft who are all, and I know they have more than that on the roster, but if you have five who wind up in the rotation offensively and defensively, that's a pretty good draft.
I tell you what, bud. I tell you what. This is the this is something we haven't been able to say as 49er fans for a long time. I am juiced about this secondary. Like, when was the last time you felt that? We love Mooney Ward. D'Amador Lenore, budding, I don't know if I could call him a superstar. There's a budding, really good player.
Yep.
Like, exciting player. And then, you know, Yadam is an interesting player. Green, out of the draft, looks like a really interesting player. Luter, still a young, really interesting player. Not terribly thrilled about Ambry Thomas, and he's hurt. But that is the absolute end of your corner bench. And I didn't even start with the safeties, where you've got now Talanoa Hufanga and Malik Mustafa out of the draft that everyone's excited about. I don't know if either one of them are going to start. Because, you know, Odom is out there as a very solid performer. Jair Brown as your earliest pick last year. Both are going to get a lot of time on the field. That's a really, really good group.
More depth than we've seen and more top of the rotation, good players. It has seemed like every year for the past, oh, I don't know, four or five, one good corner and one shaky corner. That's kind of been the thing.
Totally.
And nowadays, you need three corners because you play nickel so much and you got to have a good slot corner. And this year, it looks like you've got three good starters and five good corners
like
that you
five.
Can lean on. Yeah.
Yeah. I like five.
Right.
Ugh.
How many corners? Five.
Five.
Yeah.
Like, usually when someone goes down and a corner comes off the bench, you're like, oh, hell.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
He's going to get picked on.
Detroit beat Tampa in the playoffs. I'm going to forget the name. Grandy, maybe you could help me out. The guy who was one-on-one with Amon-Ra in that playoff game last year. This was the game to get to San Francisco. Right? Winner goes to the NFC title game. It was the Bucks and Lions, and it was tied. Late, like mid-second half, the game was tied. And then my man on the Bucks went down, and they brought in a backup, and the game ended. Goff and Amon-Ra just torched him. First play, they're like, we're going right after him. It was a 25-yard gain, and everything went downhill from there, and the Lions ran away from the Bucks and made their way to San Francisco. I'm going to forget the name. It's too many people to remember. But anyway, like, if you've got corner depth, holy hell, that's a weapon.
Yeah.
Woo.
Big time.
Not a lot of people have that.
No, and I think that leads me to one of my other big storylines, which is defensive line depth questions. This team has been built for the better part of 4 or 5 years since Nick Bosa came. Great defensive line depth, great rotations. And so the secondary, if the secondary is not as good, that's okay because the D-line has been so nasty that the secondary doesn't have to cover for as long. It feels like this year you have more question marks up front in the defensive line. You have a couple of injuries with Gross Matos, who's got the sprained knee, and you've got, you know, Collins and Floyd coming in, trying to fit into the scheme and the system. New defensive coordinator. Javon Hargrave had a little bit of a down year last year, down compared to what you're paying him. So I just wonder about the defensive line depth, if it's going to be good enough with a couple of early injuries to account for the fact that the secondary is not as great.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Jamel Dean, by the way, thank you, Grandy, was the name of the Tampa corner, long-rangey guy who went down and Tampa could not recover. But back to the D line, I don't see a whole lot of question marks, as you put it. I do just see, like, it's just not a terribly deep group. And I think that you're going to see moves. in the first month of the season for the Niners to bring in more people on the defensive line. You know, like today, all these teams, like it's cut down day and you get your final roster. But now, like, okay, who just got released? Who just got made available around the league? There definitely could be more moves. That's one question I would have for John Lynch tomorrow. Are more moves to be made on the defensive line? And that's nothing against the Gross Matoses and Kevin Givens of the world and everything, but it's a very, very unproven group. And yes, like if I'm going to circle a name or two where you're like, can't have an injury there, Nick Bosa,
of course,
absolutely leads that pack. Like Nick Bosa goes down, what on earth do you have? What do you got?
Yeah, not a lot.
No. And then that secondary better be real amazing.
Yeah. The good news is I think Leonard Floyd has played in every available game over the last 4 years. So he's a guy who has been reliable.
Although got in the preseason.
He did.
I know he's just day-to-day.
Day-to-day. And Gross Matos, I think, is week-to-week, which is a little bit more troubling. But for me, the big question is Javon Hargrave. Can you get back to the spot where you just dominate in the middle of that defensive line? Because, you know, if he can get home up the middle, and you had Armstead last year and you don't have him now, Malik Collins has got big shoes to fill, figuratively and literally. So I just think that there are some questions in the D-line that we're not used to having.
You know what my number one non-contract related story is for the 49ers offseason that we didn't even get to, except for we get to it all the time, and that's what makes it my number one story?
Yep.
I guess I can call this non-contract related this offseason.
I know where you're going.
Yeah, it's Purdy money. Purdy money. That's the number one non-Trent, non-Brandon story of the offseason, and it's not even a story yet, but we can't get away from it. And I mean this now nationally. This is something that everyone is thinking about, and it is maybe, gosh, in the last, I don't know how long, it is probably one of the most, if not the most, debatable contract stories that I can remember in this league, because we've never seen anything like this. We've never seen anything like this. From Mr. Irrelevant to market setter in 3 years, it's never happened before. Hell, what he's achieved has never happened before. And so, like, you get opinions that range from, dude, of course he's worth $60 million. His numbers are impeccable. His performance is literally impeccable. And then you can swing it all the way to where people will simply start doubling over with laughter at the idea that you would give this kid more than $50 million per year. This is a story now. It will be next month, the month after that, the month after that, and every month until it signs. And then the second he signs, it becomes an even bigger story in a different direction based on did they or did they not.
Right. And did they, and how much did they, when they actually do it? Because I think they're going to do it. For me, there's 0% doubt. You have 0% doubt that Trent Williams will be there for week one. I have 0% doubt that Brock Purdy will get a massive contract from the 49ers in this next offseason. For me, there's no doubt. The only question will be, how much? And right now you've got three guys with an average annual of $55 million. So if Brock Purdy has another year this year like he did last year, he's going to make more than $55 average annual.
But that's a big if. That's a huge if.
Well, of course, he's got to play 17 games, and really he has to play 20 games and maybe 21 games. He has to go out there and play quarterback in a dangerous game, stay healthy, and do well. I don't think it's a huge if because I believe in Brock, but I think it's a greater possibility that he gets hurt than there is that he falls on his face.
Okay, I'll buy that. At the same time, here's what I hear that I find interesting. Vibes, bad. Can't win without Brandon. Can't win without Trent. Bad camp. I don't know. Super Bowl hangover. All this. Oh, but Brock will have a great year. Well, wait a minute. If Brock's going to have a great year, then we're done here.
Well, none of those things are related to Brock. The vibes aren't bad because of Brock.
No, that's not what I mean. If Brock's going to have a great year, then I would argue, by definition, the team is winning a lot of games.
They can go 11-6 and lose in the divisional round, and Brock can have a good year.
Yes. I would argue that's not like, I know I think differently than others on this. I would argue that's not some like awful disaster of a season.
It's not, but it definitely would be falling short of where the bar is set.
Sure.
The goal, yes, but also the bar. The goal is to win the Super Bowl. The bar, I think, is conference championship game. Again, yeah. And if you're home, you should win it. And if you're not home, you're probably going to be an underdog, and you won't be more than a touchdown underdog. I guarantee that.
I guess what I mean, though, is if, like, I think the big question always about Brock is, like, how much of it can you put on his shoulders? This has been the thing under Kyle Shanahan with 49er quarterbacks. It's like, okay, you're good, but what about when the chips are down? Do we rely on you? And with Jimmy Garoppolo, they clearly didn't. They got to the NFC title game and went, how about if we hand off on every single play? Or if you get the ball in your own territory with a minute to go, you're like, how about if we kneel and leave? Let's just get the hell out of here. I don't even want to do this. And so it's clearly very different with Brock. They have had to rely on him more. There has been more success there. Fourth quarter comebacks in playoff games. He's been able to execute that. But there's still plenty of people with a fair point that it's like, you're still not the straw that stirs the drink like the other $55 million QBs. You're still not, hey, Chiefs, we need a score. What are you going to do? Dude, just drop Patrick back and let's ride. Or Josh, or Lamar, or whatever.
Well, there's Trevor.
You still don't do that much. Like, the 49ers are still, their favorite play is still, like, Christian run over toward Trent, right? And Debo, like, end around toward Trent.
Yes, but against Green Bay, you got the ball back with 6 minutes left, and he did it.
He
did it. So I think this is something that we can track week to week, and I love your idea about Brockster's Millions. And for those of you kids who don't know about the movie Brewster's Millions, it's a play on that, a Richard Pryor movie from 40-something years ago, but I think it would be fun to track his contract in our mind every week, because right now, if they were extending him right now, and the top of the market is 55 average annual, I would put him at probably $57 million right now. If he was eligible for a new deal, and the top number that just got signed was 55, Jordan Love, he would, 4 and 220.
He gets more than Jordan?
I think he gets more than Jordan Love right now, today. I mean,
he's achieved more.
Yeah.
He's achieved more, but there is still the feeling like their team surrounds him less than Green Bay surrounds Jordan. Like, when Jordan was winning games last year, it felt much more like it's because of Jordan.
Well, we were getting to know these other players.
Yeah.
They didn't have a McCaffrey and a Kittle and a Debo.
Well, that's kind of the point. Like, that's the criticism of Purdy, is like, Jordan Love walked out of there, and all of a sudden you've heard of Dontavian Wicks.
I like the player.
Yeah, so do
Romeo
I.
Romeo Doubs.
Like, he's got all these pop receivers, and all of a sudden they all look good. Someone goes, well, why? Oh, well, right? So then here's...
It couldn't be because they're just good young players. It has to be the quarterback.
No, but it all works together always.
Yeah,
but you
exactly.
Still have the same amount of people who are sitting here going, well, can't win without Ayuk. Well, I'd argue if you can't win without Ayuk, then yeah, you are actually... There's a closet shot at Purdy there, which is that, like, somehow he is completely dependent on the talent of who he's throwing the ball to. Completely acknowledging that all of these situations are hand in hand.
Of course.
Everybody helps everybody.
And you couldn't win
with
Ayuk.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, Ayuk had 3 catches in the Super Bowl, so you couldn't win with Ayuk. So how are you going to win without Ayuk? Is your team better? I don't buy it. But for me, the Brock Purdy question this offseason was the big scandal about playing time. Oh, Brock Purdy, you're playing him too much. And then in the third preseason game, we all were okay with him getting hit 9 times on 14 dropbacks.
No, I'm never okay with him getting hit, but I'd like him to have his teammates with him when he plays. That's all.
Yeah, to me was an interesting storyline with the preseason.
Baldy was really good, by the way. While we're talking Purdy, check this out. First of all, he's reacting to Mike Sando's ranking of the quarterbacks. And what place was Purdy in? He was top
11.
12.
Yeah.
He was top
12. Bottom of the second tier, I think.
But he was tier 2, right? He wasn't tier 1, but he was tier 2. Anyway, he's comes in somewhere around there for Mike Sando. And here's what Baldy said about that.
Well, you heard George Kittle when he said, it's something when he steps into a huddle, and guys like Trent Williams and Debo and McCaffrey, like, they feel more confident when he delivers the play. Like, their confidence level goes up. You heard Nick Bosa go, how in the hell are you so good? Like, how did you do this? Like, How are you so confident and so good? Like, that's all that really matters, is what those guys think about him in the locker room. The list are the list. I don't know how you could put Justin Herbert, honestly, above Brock Purdy on any level. I mean, he's been injured. He's never, you know, playoffs. Like, you could go on any list. Yeah, you go out there and you watch Justin Herbert throw a football. He wows you. You go out there and watch Brock Purdy win games. That wows me.
Okay. That's an interesting one to sort of like play with, I think, contractually going forward. Herbert and Purdy. Because you will hear people say, no GM would take Purdy over Herbert. I don't know if that's still going to be true after this year. I really don't. And there's absolutely no way you can compare the accomplishments.
Well, I love that Baldy said that. Like, he gets wowed by watching him go out there and win games. And that is pretty pretty eye-popping when you see a guy, I think, 17-4 in the regular year, 4-2 in the postseason for Brock Purdy, 21-6 as a starter. That is pretty eye-popping. Herbert was tied for fifth in the Mike Sando QB tiers. And again, Sando doesn't create this.
Yeah.
He talks to 50 execs.
Yep.
Purdy was 12th in the bottom of tier two. Jordan Love was 14th at the very bottom of tier two.
Herbert, 5 years, $262.5 million, $218 million guaranteed. All right, more Baldy on Purdy.
It bugs me, too, and it bothers the organization because the guy has been phenomenal. But, I mean, look, Matt Stafford was never talked about as a great quarterback until he went to the Rams with Sean McVay and won a Super Bowl. And now he's probably top five, and legitimately so. But winning the Super Bowl changes a lot of things, for sure. Nick Foles won a Super Bowl, was the MVP. He got jobs for the next 6 years after that. He just stepped away this year, but he kept getting jobs because they kept waiting for him to rekindle that magic. But they say everything about Brock except what he is, which is a damn good winning quarterback that just makes one great play after another, week in, week out. You can't count five bad games that he's had in his entire career. In 2.5 years, you can't count five bad games. Like, that's almost hard to do it at a quarterback.
That's an interesting comment. I mean, he gives Purdy 2.5 years. It's a little hot.
It's
a year and 3/4 or whatever. But yeah, you can't count five bad games. You can count some, like, mediocre-ish games.
Right.
And actually, I would argue, how many, like, awful performances? One?
Well, the one on Christmas against Baltimore.
That's it. That's the only time I'm like, Purdy was brutal. Any other games where you'd say that?
I have to rack my brain, but not when he was just awful. There was times when the offense looked bad and he didn't bail him out. Which, tough to do when your offensive line's not blocking and your receivers aren't getting open. But
all right, 888-957-9570. We've got some people who want to weigh in on this. Let's do that next. We're sponsored by Safeway. Willard and Dibs.
I'm not a little crybaby. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, great stuff today. And I don't know if you noticed, Dibs.
No, I'm about to break the streak, but go ahead.
Oh, don't, dude. It's 5:47 Mark.
With the C.
I'll give you that one.
I'm trying to make up for him after the earlier fight over tennis.
And listen, they may have been referenced in sort of a side passing way, but we are about 9 minutes away from executing a promise, and that is to do afternoon drive, 5 o'clock hour, market 6, San Francisco, California, without mentioning.
You won't.
Number 11 and number 71.
Yeah. Trent and Brandon. What's the status? Is he on 31? Is it 32? Does Trent want guaranteed money? I'm so sick of it. And Jake Hutchinson.
Wait, why is Farhan entering this conversation? Why did you have to do that?
That's.
Why?
Two he's and a huh. I finally got it down as the guy's down to his last month of the job.
Oh, wow. Did you just fire Farhan Zaidi?
You won't.
I don't talk about other people's job status. I don't do that.
Now, why do you got to make a snooty voice about it?
Because that's my snooty Willard.
I'm not comfortable doing that. I can sit here and tell you that I don't think somebody has done a good job.
Damn it, Farhan!
Even though I spent about 3 years telling you that Farhan Zaidi was doing a good job.
Yeah.
And now he's not doing a good job. And there are intricacies to it that no one wants to talk about. But, like, I can sit here and say that without using our microphones to be like, fire that guy.
Yeah, I don't...
I just think that that's, yeah, that's for me. I think that
I
that's...
I don't want it to happen.
That's bad juice.
I think that it will happen.
And that's fine.
I don't think that it should happen.
Okay.
And I've been one of the only people since the deadline on this very station to say... I believe that he has done largely what they asked him to do, but it hasn't been good enough. And here we are with a somnambulant product, Sleepy.
I mean,
Sleepy Joe, we should call him.
Yeah, we can go back to the phones on this, has he done what they asked him to do? I think he did a good job of undoing part of what he originally did.
Fair.
So I don't know if he did what they asked him to do. He did some other stuff that didn't go well, and he did an okay job at the deadline of undoing some of it.
The old undo button.
Yeah. He did that that edit button.
Yeah.
Back.
No doubt.
Anyway, let's go to Jesse in Hayward. Hi, Jesse. What are you doing?
Hey, what's going on? I'm walking my dog right now.
Oh, what kind of dog you got?
Just kind of little mutt named Frank.
Frank, I love Frank, it. Boy. You got Frank. I love the kind of dog owner that you are, Jesse, because I got a rescue. I got a rescue shepherd mix, and I get it all the time. People be like, is that a Belgian Malinois? And I'm like, what'd you just say to me? Like, I don't know. I don't know what kind of dog this is. It's a dog.
Yep. Yeah. Terrier or something.
Yeah, it's a good dog.
One of them terriers. It's Frank.
It's Frank. I got Frank. All right, say hi to Frank, Jesse. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just wanted to weigh in on the Brock Purdy situation. And my take on it is people look to the Mr. Irrelevant stuff a little too much. I think the reason that he's so hated on and undervalued across the league is because everyone else has seen what happened with Jimmy Garoppolo when he left that 49ers system and left Kyle Shanahan. I personally am a Raiders fan, so I saw very intimately what happened when Jimmy G left Kyle Shanahan. So I think the question that everyone has is, if Brock Purdy's no longer with the 49ers, if he comes over to the Raiders, is he still going to be putting up Patrick Mahomes numbers, or is it going to be Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell type stuff?
I think, Jesse, obviously there's no way to like know or answer that question. Thank you, Jesse. But like, I think Jesse is very much tapping into sort of why people feel the way they do. And I guess the only response for that is to just respond to the question with a question. Why do you think that way? Why, for Brock Purdy to be good or paid, does he have to be able, in your mind, to play well with a different team that he's not on?
Yeah,
I don't care if he would be good or bad on the Raiders.
They don't care either, Niners.
Yeah, he's good here. He's good here.
And he's better here than Jimmy Garoppolo was here.
Not even close.
Right. I mean, Jimmy's best year versus Brock's only full year, Brock was better in every category. And that was Jimmy at his best. And now Brock, in his first full year, was better than Jimmy at his best. So yes, he's clearly better than Jimmy Garoppolo. But that part of it always interests me, too. Does it, like, would he be better in this system, or would he be better with that? He doesn't have to be. He just has to be good here. And if the team believes that he can be good here, even if they don't have all the talent around him down the road, which they won't, then they're going to pay him. And right now, the going rate is $55 million a year. And I do think, right now, he is in line to get more than that.
He might be, although, again, like, the going rate. Some coaches and GMs and contract people reject that. Isn't that what we heard from Belichick yesterday?
Well, there's a certain player right now who's trying to get the going rate. I'm not going to mention
him. Don't you bring him up.
We've had a good show.
But I think that there's teams that rightfully are like, I don't care what the going rate is.
Right.
Tell you what, why, instead of bringing him up, since we don't want to bring him up, bring up Lamar. Bring up the Ravens. Hey, Ravens. See what the Browns gave to Deshaun Watson? And the Ravens looked at Lamar and went, great, they're dumb, we're not.
He did get the fourth highest actual guarantee in the history of the quarterback position.
Lamar.
He got $135 million guaranteed at signing.
Dude, he's the MVP. He deserves right. it. My point is if you go to the Ravens after the Deshaun contract and you go, look, I'm a little bit more accomplished than Deshaun, he got $235 million guaranteed. I'd like $240 million guaranteed. And the Ravens are like, no.
He got $260, but the actual guaranteed. $135 guaranteed at signing. The practical guarantee is $185. Deshaun's is $230 across the board now. Across the board now.
He got the Kirk Cousins contract, but on steroids.
Woo-wee! Yeah, Cousins got, man.
You're fully guaranteed.
Yep. So
fully guaranteed. And so, you know, teams are going to be like, no.
Right.
What? No. That's not what we can do. So going rate, schmoing rate.
I get it.
No, that's awesome. Cool, Dallas. Cool, $34 million a year. No.
And Dak is coming up. So, I mean, Dak might be in line to reset the market if he has a good year.
Well, he had the sneakiest, best year of anybody numbers-wise last year. But there's the other thing. Is it numbers? Is it wins?
Depends on what you value.
Playoff wins? Is it your particular situation? What do you do? Like,
Dak got 160. He got 4 and 160 back when that was a thing.
I think the whole thing sometimes gets a little bit too cookie cutter for my taste. You know what I mean? Like, we look at it and we go, oh, well, okay. But so Jordan Love got this. Brock Purdy gets that. It was two totally different players, two totally different situations.
Yeah, different systems,
so,
no doubt.
So much going on. And, you know, I think it's up to each player as to whether or not you want to hold a hardline stance of like Trent Williams seems to be doing, where it's like, dude, you have to give me X, Y, or Z. You know, then there's Jared Goff, who took his team all the way to the NFC title game, and he's like, dude, I'm fine slotting in a little bit less. Sure, Jordan Love gets 55, I get 52. I've been to a Super Bowl, I've been to two title games. Jordan Love's been where?
Yeah,
but I'll take a little less.
Brock Purdy currently 84th among quarterbacks in average annual salary.
I think he should be higher than that.
Yes, his average annual is $934,000. He's ahead of only Tyson Bagent, Sam Ellinger, Tommy I Live at Home DeVito, Malik Cunningham, and Chris Oladukun.
And Malik Cunningham is only sort of a quarterback. He plays multiple positions.
Good call.
Yeah, that's fun. Grandy, what are you doing tonight? What's happening?
Baldy's coming up next.
Oh!
Yeah.
Baldy was good today.
He was very complimentary to Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that on the app now for the walk.
You better walk fast. I need somebody to let me in.
You're going to have to wait for me.
I will. I got no choice.
Yeah, you're boxed in today, kid.
You got leverage
over
me. You got some leverage going.
I might stop on the way.
All right, Grandy's coming up, and it's brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Would you like to do it again tomorrow?
I'll give you one more.
Turn the mic on.
I'll give you one more this week. Sorry about that. No, each had one today.
Show's not over yet. Now you can turn it off. For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.